This is the Lubetkin on Communications podcast for Monday, June 27th, 2016. Welcome to the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. I'm Steve Lubetkin, your host, Podcast Steve on Twitter. In this program, we talk to people in the public relations, communications, and journalism fields about their activities. And we also present interesting seminar panels and conferences being conducted around the country. In this episode, something a little different, a conversation in the studio with the hosts of the Angry Millennial podcast, Jose Rosado and Stevie Chris. We spoke with them, believe it or not, last summer. We finally got around to updating the interview and getting it up on the podcast, and we hope you enjoy it. The Angry Millennial podcast features interviews with creatives from all walks of life, dictations of blog posts for the vision impaired and the too long didn't read crowd, and a peek into the lifestyle of a career creative. Stevie and Jose travel around the country recording their podcast interviews, and while they were in the Philadelphia area, they actually stopped in here at Professional Podcasts and chatted with us about their program. Jose Rosado and Stevie Chris, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, of course, it's a pleasure.
So we don't have too many podcasters come by the podcast studio. Most of our guests are people from more traditional backgrounds. So
dignitaries, that kind of thing.
Not dignitaries. Yeah, they're a little bit less than dignitaries. They're more indignant most of the time. but indignant goes along with the name of your podcast. You guys host the Angry Millennial. Millennial podcasts.
Yes,
how did you come up with that name, and why are the millennials angry?
You know what's funny? I never, I'm 32, and I never actually, I kept hearing the word, right? And I realized I was near the generation of that. But it wasn't until I looked it up that I realized I literally am a millennial. Anyone born, was it 1980 to whenever the next one starts? Yeah. And I started thinking to myself at first, I said, you know what? I don't really have anything in common with millennials. It's just stupid, you know, whatever. And then, you know, Steve, like we talked about prior, I started realizing maybe I did. I mean, I graduated when I was in college. It was when I got into photography, and I was going to Iona College in New York. Go Gales. And I got into photography my senior year. And when I was about to graduate, I realized in college I could do really well in school. In high school, I was never a great student. I was more about sports and hanging out with my friends and being into cars and stuff like that. And then when I went into college, I got a scholarship, and I decided, okay, maybe I should really pay attention and really get into it. And when I was about to graduate, I started looking at the landscape, you know, 2006. So it wasn't great. And I said, well, I either can go keep continuing going to school, get my master's in something, or, you know, take a chance on you know, the job market. And I decided to get my MBA in marketing, and I thought it would really go well with my undergrad in advertising. It would kind of broaden my appeal. And yes, oddly enough, I got my first job out of college when I was in grad school, was at a high-end photo studio. So I said, okay, this is pretty neat. I'll just keep doing this until I get a real job. And then I graduated a year and a half later from grad school in 2008. And as you know, it wasn't much better than either to look for work and get a job. And I spent the next pretty much probably 4 or 5 years looking for work. I was lucky that I had photography, because I just did that. And it was funny, because I would go on job interviews and people would say, hey, on paper, you know, you got an MBA and all this is great. Photography, that looks fun. But what, you know, what do you really have in terms of work experience? And it would get really frustrating, because, you know, at that time I was in this limbo where on paper I looked too expensive. Right, they just saw 2 degrees and thought, okay, he wants something like, you know, $80,000 a year, some six figure salary. But in reality, I didn't have the experience, the work experience, to justify that.
Yeah, the degree, but not the experience.
Right, and it was one of those things. It was funny, when I was in grad school, I did my thesis on whether companies value work experience over education. And I interviewed like a whole bunch of CEOs and senior executives from companies and stuff. And very, it was honestly a little jarring to say that it was the work experience they value more. And you know how it is. I mean, you've been in corporate America where how can you say to someone, I'm desperate and I just want a chance to prove myself and I just want a job and I'll take anything.
It's become increasingly difficult for the millennials and even for people in my generation, the baby boomers, mm-hmm. to get into corporate positions, particularly now as baby boomers are in many cases being forced to exit from the workforce, being downsized. They're not getting back in so easily. Yeah. And so for a lot of people, millennials and baby boomers alike, reinventing and doing what you guys are doing with the podcast is another option.
Yeah. And that's kind of where it came in. It was, for me, it was photography. And then, I got back into writing and started writing more and write for a few sites. And I said, okay, why not podcasting? And it was always the same thing. I was always very creative growing up. But for a long time I was a closet creative, if you will, where, you know, I started realizing, oh, those kids that were all black and are very moody. And
sometimes, you know, you have
don't look at me.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying,
I guess it's true.
Sometimes you have to do the creative stuff, quietly because otherwise you'll get teased.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I was in school. I was like, I'd rather play sports and go to parties and do that kind of thing. And
so how did you guys get together? How did this happen? Stevie?
My story is pretty stark opposite from that, really. High school was, I played sports for a little while. It's hilarious to think back. I started playing football as a guard and tackle.
Wow.
Yeah, go figure. But I stopped that pretty quickly and I kept skateboarding and snowboarding and I ended up teaching snowboarding and stuff for a while. But like during high school, I always had that creative, I was very right-minded. I was always the creative one. You know, I did okay in high school. You know, I was just
more. Were you in a drama club?
No. I took photography. That's kind of when it started, but I didn't realize it. I took the photography classes as like an excuse to roam the halls during study hall.
Yeah, but sometimes people go against type. You know, you're a creative type, and you force yourself into that. You know, into that corporate box or whatever.
But yeah, I mean,
and you're not happy.
It wasn't corporate. I was a musician more than a photographer back then, and
also starving.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. After high school,
he's really a self-masochist. He just loves to torture himself.
Yeah, right. But yeah, after high school, I started going to college. I worked a year, and that was a mistake. Because I knew if I didn't go to college right away, I wasn't gonna want to go. Because I kind of knew in the back of my head it wasn't for me. But I started going to classes, and like the second semester, I literally found myself going to the doorway, stopping, looking around the classroom. It was very like Ferris Bueller moment. And everyone would look at me, I'd be like, oh, shit. And I would just turn around and leave and go play music. And I started playing in bands that started in high school, but I eventually met some people and ended up playing in this one band. And for what it was pretty large. Like you guys wouldn't know it, but it opened a lot of doors, and it also made me realize how jarring and screwed up the music industry was. So long story short, I stopped that, but that kind of opened my eyes to, wow, like I wish I had a camera a lot more than I did when I was on the road. Because when I was playing music, I'd be on stage, I would be looking at everything, and there's so much going on. There's a story you want to capture that you can't do just, you know, playing music on a stage. And then after I stopped playing music and I kind of got out of the band industry, the whole music industry, I started shooting more. And since I didn't have a degree or anything, it was tough. But I ended up getting this job after a few, you know, kind of stepping stone jobs for a broadcast company, which we are actually talking about a little bit earlier. And I was there for a while, and I started doing a lot of photography while I was there. I was doing product photography while I was there, pre-press layout. I mean, I was working directly under the VP of marketing for like a $100 million company. And that kind of, it fizzled out, ended up in Philadelphia. I'm trying to get through this whole story quicker.
How did you guys get together?
But that's the thing. Photo, I ended up coming back here doing photography, and we ended up linking together through mutual friends in a studio.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I had been talking to a few people about trying to do something similar. Like photography, it's my main, that's what I do. But I wanted to do something fun, like something to talk to people, because I like hearing their stories. I like seeing what people are doing, you know, where they started, just, you know, like we're talking about here. But we didn't realize it, but I left the studio and Jose called me for something completely different. And we started talking about the podcast thing. And he told me he was thinking about doing it for a year. And I was like, no way. I've been thinking about the same thing. Let's kind of pair up and do this together.
And at that point, I had my first episode in the can. That was it. I had a list of my friends who were really great creatives. And I lived in Philadelphia for a number of years. So just last year, I moved down outside Baltimore, my girlfriend and our two kids. And, you know, I said, you know what? I still love Philadelphia and I want to highlight a lot of the great creatives in that city. So I started reaching out to all my friends who did all kinds of things. So the first couple episodes were a couple photographers. I had a friend of mine who is a writer and author. And then the very first episode were two brothers that are cinematographer friends of mine, Eric and Chris Allman. And then we also had Jenna Adams, who's the director of the Reinhardt Modeling Agency in Philadelphia. And it was, you know, we did like 4 or 5 episodes in 2 days out of his apartment. And it was very, I'm sure you can appreciate, very run and gun type thing. From my first episode, I picked the cinematographer's brain about audio and said, okay, what's the cheapest way I can get up and running, but not be completely crap quality, because I knew that was a big thing. Was I hated listening to stuff that the audio just sounded like, you know, crap. So it was like, okay, I need to spend a little bit of money but not break the bank, because I'm sure podcasting is just like anything else, like photography and cycling. You can spend as little or as much money as you really want.
You can, if you know what you're doing, you can use cheaper tools.
Yeah. But yeah, so we started just kind of joining up and saying, hey, look, you know, what do you think? And we had similar ideas on a lot of things. And it was, I want to say 2 weeks in that I decided, hey, let's go to the Photo Plus Expo. And I've always been a big proponent of going to events, just to network. I love networking. So yeah. I would go to a lot of these like standout forums that are put together by a company called Digital Transitions. And we actually got to interview one of the guys who works over there, named Doug Peterson. And
he's gonna be
up soon. But what was great was they knew that, you know, I would go to enough of these events and they would see me. And a lot of times it's I don't want to say it's a big sell, but they have a lot of vendors that go there and they are selling their services and they want to educate you. But I just went to network, really. And a lot of the people that I met, the first one I went to last year in LA, and then this year I went to New York, are going to be on as guests. And then we went to Photo Plus and it kind of blew up from there.
And the podcasting is very much like when you take a camera to an event, it's an icebreaker.
Yes.
Lets you talk to people you might not otherwise talk to, and opens doors.
And I'm sure you probably know what this is like, where when we were at Photo Plus, we would talk to someone, or I would meet someone who literally, and I'm not trying to be a fanboy, but was someone I knew for years and never spoke to. I'm going, oh, wow, this is such and such is right here. And it would always be through another friend, a mutual friend. And then it was so overwhelming how easily flowing the conversation went.
It's fun. Oh, it's stupid how easy that is. And you don't realize it because, I don't know, it's a fear maybe. It's that awkwardness. Yeah. But when you're there, you're like, why didn't I do this years ago?
Yeah.
What was I doing?
The first thing I thought of.
And all the people that you could have talked to.
Yeah. And it was crazy because people were asking us there, oh, what do you do? Oh, well, we're actually here because we just started this podcast. And they would go, oh, okay, well, tell me more about it. Oh, well, it's called the Angry Millennial. We just talk to a bunch of creatives. We're photographers, but it's not just photographers. It's really anyone who gets the, you know, creative lifestyle, you know, the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, the ugly kind of thing. And it's, we have musicians, magicians, you know, writers, anyone really who just kind of gets it. And it was crazy because we would ask one person and then they would literally be sending to another person who within our industry is pretty big and would go, hey, you should do their podcast. And then it just kept going around that table. And that
that's literally how one of them, Jeremy Cower, he's walking by and I think Doug Saunders. Hey, you should do their podcast. It's the next morning.
You had him on.
Yeah. And that's what appeals to me about the flexibility of podcasting is, you know, you can turn on less than a dime and do whatever you need to do to get some great content.
I think honestly the biggest thing we're running into right now is like you said, the audio quality to me is like the top priority, and also the rapport you can develop through in-person contact, and we knew that. So a lot of in the beginning was okay, we could do it over Skype or we could do whatever, and then I quickly started realizing, you know what, I want to do as many in-person as possible. And the logistics of that is the most expensive part of anything else.
That's a big challenge.
Yes,
and a lot of, you know, we do a lot of location podcasting for clients, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't make sense if the person you want to interview is somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and we've had guests on this program who live in California or live in Europe, and it just isn't practical to do it any other way. Now, you know, before Skype, it was a phone call.
Right.
And before, you know, cell phones and widely available unlimited long distance, it was expensive to do that kind of reporting. But now it's not, and it's easy enough to get people. But like you say, you know, doing it in person, there's always, you know, there's more of an energy.
Right.
It's a different kind of energy.
Right. And that's kind of, you know, I said, hey, if we're going to do it, you know, why not as much as we feasibly can keep it doing it in person. So a lot of our guests, it's been either people in the Tri-State area and we meet in Philadelphia, or we've been to New York City a couple of times already. We're going to Boston this weekend and Pardon next week, going to Beantown.
That's very ambitious.
Yeah. You know.
So who has been, you only have a few shows in the can. Who has been the most inspiring guest that you've had?
I think so. The guests have been so different, it's hard to really pinpoint something like that.
Yeah.
Well, who's been the most interesting?
Yeah, who'd be your favorite thus far? I guess we both could probably have different answers.
I don't know. I mean, again, it's so different. Like, I loved having Francis and Dan because hearing just something, especially you don't hear.
Tell about who they are.
They're magicians. My buddy Dan, Dan House, he's a magician, and the stuff he does is amazing, but he does consulting for people like David Blaine and everything, and just hearing the stuff behind it and the stories that they have, it's incredible. And then Francis,
he didn't try to do any magic tricks on the podcast.
No,
that's
no,
sort of like, you know, in the 1940s, one of the top rated radio stars was Edgar Bergen, who was a ventriloquist, and his dummy was Charlie McCarthy. He was on the radio doing ventriloquism. Yeah, you could not see his lips move.
Yeah. Nice. That's pretty cool.
So what's next? What where do you want to take the podcast?
You know, honestly, it's ever since Photo Plus, quite honestly, it's just been a whirlwind. So right now we're just concentrating on getting as many great guests and really great content as possible. And the future right now is pretty wide open. And that to me is daunting and exciting at the same time.
I think the balance between scheduling too is difficult because the past 3 weeks has been crazy. And then we got home and I know I've been a little more difficult because my schedule just went crazy. So being in Baltimore and Philly, I don't know. It's a little hurdle, but.
So you go on the road, you record a bunch of podcasts, you take them back to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long does it take to get them edited and get them up?
Generally, our scheduling format is now on Mondays. It's the long form hour, around an hour. So 45 to hour and 15 interviews with people. And then Thursdays, we just started last week, are going to be really short form 15-minute episodes on different things, whether it's kind of wide open. So it could be a guest host if Stevie can't make it that day, or a kind of a panel discussion on a certain topic. I started dictating blog posts and articles I've written as a way of really, because like you said, some people just can't sit through a 1,500-word article. So instead, maybe they can listen to a 10-minute podcast and get the same experience. So I started doing, that's the one I just put up today. So it's, you know, we record a lot of the interviews and then we schedule them out. So right now, I think we have 10 episodes.
Yeah, there's a few other things that we talked about maybe doing, adding, you know, a blog just for different content for people to go through while they're on the site. The podcast, the foundation, but just to have something to engage you and keep you there longer, maybe. I know we talked about doing a video because being photographers, our styles are very different. You know, maybe doing something like that. You know, I think even though it's a podcast website, I think having video is good. Well, like we were talking about in when you were on our episode, it's always good to have multiple facets. Just, you know,
it's you never know where someone's going to come to your content.
Yeah, right.
And so having all kinds of content.
Content is king. That's always the
We thought about doing like a shootout almost, yeah, where we take similar lighting kits and similar one model and shoot in different styles. Because a lot of what he does is what I used to do at the studio, where it's very high key lighting, multiple light setups, a lot of compositional work with composite work, I should say, where it's, you know, Photoshop heavy. And a lot of my stuff is more natural light, kind of editorial lifestyle kind of stuff.
It's always dangerous having two photographers in the studio. They are separated by a table and there's microphones holding them apart. Where can people find the podcast?
So we have it's on iTunes. So if you just look up The Angry Millennial Show, we're also on theangrymillennialshow.com, which is where we, you know, post about a bunch of the episodes, and then we're also on Stitcher and SoundCloud.
Well, it's great. Jose and Stevie, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
A lot of time elapsed from the recording of the conversation with Stevie and Jose, and we thought it would be worthwhile to get back on the phone with Jose and get an update after so many months have gone by. Give me an update. What's going on with you guys?
Sure. So let's see. Last time we spoke was back in October, November?
I think that's right.
Yeah. It's been great. It's been really great. We've traveled all around end of last year. I went to Boston a few times, New York, even flew out to Seattle to speak with Chase Jarvis of Creative Live. And that was one of the highlight episodes of last year and the whole show, really. And then this year, we realized we wanted to get better at the remote aspect of it, just because the traveling was getting strenuous and that kind of thing. And I want to be home more with Jess and the kids. So we started doing that, and our queue started growing exponentially to the point where we ended up having like a 4 to 5 month queue.
A queue full of shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
You've got more energy for podcasting than even I have.
Exactly. So for me, but what I realized, and what I'm sure you can appreciate, was it kind of sucked, because it wasn't very fun to say that, you know, when we have a great interview and there's high energy, and then someone says, oh, so listen, when does it go up? And then I say, the fall. you know, and it that kind of that part of it was kind of like you saw people's like faces like fall flat. And I was like, yeah, I get it, you know, like and that was something that I really didn't like. And I was tired of kind of explaining it to people through email and after calls and stuff like that. So what we ended up doing was taking a big risk and kind of in a sense doubling down on the idea of the show and you know really trying to make it that we're saying to ourselves, okay, it's viable, well, let's double down. So we took it from a two day a week show to a 3 day a week show. So now we're on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So Monday and Friday are two of the hour long interviews with creatives and entrepreneurs. And then on Wednesdays, it's just a short episode with usually me and Jessica just kind of keeping up with what's going on and just different topics. So more topical, more timely, because that was another thing that kind of sucked was if someone brought up something that they were doing the next month, I had to cut it out. And that hurt too, you know, because the whole point is you want to promote your brand and the events you're doing. And I'd have people on, they talk about something next month and I have to go, yeah, don't bother. You know,
one of the things people don't realize about podcasting is that there is a significant amount of work after the interview is done. Mm-hmm. It's not just this instantaneous thing, although some people do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I've actually been, you know, lucky enough to be on the other side of the table just like today, enough to see how people do it. I mean, even today, I was actually interviewed earlier today for a live radio show, and I've wasn't sure exactly how that would work. And they literally have a producer and like a whole call center and they run it. And we just called in over Skype and they ran it. And it was interesting because I've never done that before. And then you have, you know, seeing how other people do it. As you know, and we all know, people do live broadcasts, like live YouTube streaming interviews. It is. And I've seen people do that. And that's, as you can imagine, going live, it's live. So it's its own set of kind of headaches and hurdles and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's definitely interesting because now I've seen in just the last 9 months, the way a lot of different people do it. And I've seen the way we've transitioned and I've done it on our end. And it's really interesting that there's so many ways you can run your show.
So where do you think you're going to be taking it in the future?
You know, I'm hoping that it's really just similar style. Probably not going to ramp it up any more than three days a week because I'd go crazy. But I'm really hoping that maybe I could get a place. We've gotten some sponsors come on board and they've been great. So we're hoping to keep ramping them up to the point where maybe I could actually kind of release some of the back end post-production on a team of people. So it wasn't just me and Jessica and that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe making that a little more not basically on me would be great. Beyond that, just keeping it the same, you know, keeping it with the interview style we've done. The interview we had on today, or I had today, I actually never had to explain the format of what I do. And it was really interesting when I did it, I realized how different it kind of is. So the person asking me was, how do you get people to open up? And how do you get people to open up who've been interviewed a lot and who are actually kind of private because they're pretty high profile people? And I said, well, it's easy. Like I've noticed, like I will do my due diligence in making sure that the questions I ask them are stuff that if you are a fan of theirs, you haven't heard. You know, because if you're a fan and you've heard them answer the same five questions over and over again over the years, you're not going to want to listen. So I make sure that the questions I ask are just a bit different than I've heard them say a whole bunch of times. I make sure that they know the hour-long format and the explicit part of it are all in due part because I want them to realize they can just hang out and kind of relax. They don't need the polished PR-friendly responses. And then when we get about three quarters of the way through the interview, when hopefully they're opening up more and relaxing a bit more, I start asking a set group of questions that go a little bit deeper. You know, I start asking them, hey, what's your biggest fear? And, you know, what's your biggest regret in your career? What's the most meaningful moment in your career?
And you get them to open up about stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll share with you one story that someone said to me that there are two actually that were really profound was a guy named Peter Hurley, a big photographer out of New York. Really, really animated guy, if you know him. And I asked him, what's your biggest regret? And usually people aim it towards their career. And he said to me, you know, I've been in this studio now for about 7 years. My parents have been here probably about 4 or 5 times. He's like, and I've never said to my parents, you know, hey, why don't you just step on the you know, studio backdrop and I'll take your picture. You know, all that stuff's already just there. And my mom passed away last year. And I really regret that. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, like immediately, because Peter's probably only 10 years older than me in his early mid 40s. And so I'm thinking our parents are about the same age, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And I thought to myself, I've been shooting for 10 years and I've never taken a nice photograph of my parents. And I was like, that sucks, you know, and I never knew that about him. And another one was a comedian, Mickey Coachella, who's a big staple in the Baltimore area. He's a big, longtime 98 Rock DJ and that sort of thing. And I had him on and I said, what's the most meaningful moment in your career? And he told me a story of his first HBO special. And at the time, his mother became very ill very suddenly and was in the hospital and they wouldn't know if she was going to make it. And she actually ended up having to have her hands and feet amputated. So, you know, it was horrible, horrible thing. And, you know, all the while he's got this, you know, this biggest part of his career, you know, up his career coming up. And unbeknownst to him, the producers from HBO ended up reaching out to the hospital and arranged that his mother was there. So he steps up on the stage and ready to do a live HBO, you know, segment. And you can imagine that HBO is a huge production with cranes and jibs. And he looks up and the spotlight hits his mom, who's in a wheelchair up in the, you know, upper mezzanine of her stands. And he was like taken aback. And he said, after that, it was just me and my mom. And everyone else faded away. And I was able to just perform for my mom like I did growing up, my biggest fan. And unfortunately, after, you know, not long after that, she did pass away. But he said, I was so happy that she was able to be there for the pinnacle of my career up until that point after being, you know, my biggest supporter all my life. And I was like, wow, you know, and when people ask me why I do it, I say that. I say very selfishly, quite honestly, it's because I get to sit down with people who I respect and admire. I get to know a little bit better and they share stuff like that with me. And I learn so much every time I sit down with someone.
So let me ask you this. It's been almost a year that you've been doing this, maybe a little bit more. Is the angry millennial still angry?
You know, it's funny you mention that because, you know, obviously as when we met and all that sort of thing, people, that's the first thing people ask, you know, why are you so angry? You know, and I think now I've gotten it polished up to, I say, we are the first generation of failed institutions. If you really think about it, divorce rates. So marriage has failed. College. I mean, myself can say that I have 2 degrees and tons of student debt and no job, right? And you sit there and say, well, if all that shifted, but the expectations and people don't expect us to feel a certain way about it, it's kind of unfair. You know, so for people who basically did exactly as they were told, and then there's the end of that is broken. You know, it's tough, you know, and I being an older millennial in my 30s, I sympathize a lot with Gen Xers more so. And I tell them, imagine your generation, you did the work in the 90s and you got, like on the end of it, you got the job, the promotions, and you did the job. Well, imagine post-recession, everyone's a 1099 freelancer. No one's investing in people anymore because they're scared, you know? And it's a lot like, if you like sports, it's a lot like playing under a 1-year contract. It doesn't show a lot of faith in your in you as an individual. And if you do that to someone and then say, well, why do you not kill yourself for this company? Why are you suddenly leaving after 2 years or less? And it's like, because people realized the cloth came down. You know, they realized that we're just a number and people want more than that. And even people who are older are starting to see this. And you have a shift in people working from home and achieving more of a work-life balance because they realize it's not worth it anymore. You know, the years of killing yourself for one company and getting the gold watch are gone.
And there aren't too many companies giving the gold watches anymore.
Exactly. You know, and it's like a lot of people overnight, can they just say, hey, listen, you work for us a bunch of years. You've been great, but you know what? We're downsizing or we're shutting the doors and you're out of a job. So we have a lot more people now who are part of this gig economy who are suddenly entrepreneurial minded in their own respect out of necessity. And it's definitely going to be a while before I think we can look back and make sense of these early 2000s, because I think what compounded that is the hugest explosion of technology in the last 10 years alone. You know, remember we had flip phones that you paid $1 to respond to a text message by pressing ABC, you know, 1-3 times to get to C, you know what I mean? And now we have computers in our pockets. And it's just normal. So to me, that definitely has helped, or I should say, like, you know, like I said, compounded the issue of people not really understanding how to make heads or tails of our generation. But this past weekend, actually, I was lucky enough to go to this called the NG Summit. It was a Next Gen Summit. And it was basically all for entrepreneurs 30 and younger who were doing amazing things. And it was put on like in part with Inc. and Forbes magazine. And everyone who was part of there was under Forbes 30 under 30 list, you know, Inc.'s 40 under 40, like all these amazing lists. And I was meeting people who were like 18 years old who made a flashlight that runs off body heat. I met a gentleman, I think he was from Germany, who now lives in Colorado, who's making a fingerprint ID chip for handguns to cut down on killings and suicides and that sort of thing from other people's firearms. And these are kids in high school and college. And I'm like, this is insane, you know? And there were a lot of people who are 22 to 25 who have VC-funded companies that are bringing in millions of dollars and are running whole teams. So it was really great to meet all these people. And, you know, Steve, you would have loved it. I was literally one of the oldest people in the room the whole weekend.
I'm going to qualify for the 60 under 60 list.
Yeah, exactly. The still breathing under still breathing
list. Only for a little while longer, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it was kind of funny, honestly, to say I'm 32 and I'm literally the oldest person in this room. But it was fun. It was fun.
Well, listen, it's good to catch up with you. I wish you luck with all of the endeavors, and especially with a punishing 3-day-a-week podcasting schedule.
Yeah, it definitely, without having some really processes in place, it can get away from you pretty quick.
That could be tough. All the best, and we will see you out there on the net.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed the interview with Jose Rosado and Stevie Chris, and we appreciate your listening. If you have comments or suggestions about the podcast, write to me. It's steve@lmediacos.com. That's Lubetkin Media Companies. I'd also like to remind you about my book with Donna Papacosta from Toronto, Canada. It's called The Business of Podcasting, How to Take Your Podcasting Passion from the Personal to the Professional. It's available on the Amazon Kindle and in trade paperback. More information at thebusinessofpodcasting.com. We produce this program in the studios of Professional Podcasts. It's one of our own Lubetkin Media Companies, based here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at beingthemedia.com. For all of us here at Professional Podcast, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.